God creates dinosaurs. God destroys dinosaurs. God creates man. Man destroys God. Man creates dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs eat man. Woman inherits the earth.
Open the door, get on the floor. Everybody walk the dinosaur. Boom, boom, bakalaka-laka, boom. Boom, boom, bakalaka, boom, boom. Welcome to the movie mixtape for a big, big episode. A Tyrannosaurus size episode. Number 50. Pause for applause.
Nice.
Thank you. A milestone in the mixtape mythology. This is our 50th episode. Thank you for listening in. Thank you for joining us so far. The obvious question to ask is, Mikey, when you were sat here recording episode number one, think back. Did you ever think you would be here right now in episode number 50?
I could say with full confidence, I had no idea I would be here. In episode 50.
Neither did we. Marcy, how are you? Welcome to your 50th episode.
I thought you were going to say 50th birthday. Hello. I'm good.
For fuck's sake. Right, I even went to Mikey first that time. On purpose. On purpose.
What is going on? I'm sorry. Hi. How are you? I'm good, by the way.
Listen, you're never going to get on the Ringer podcast if you keep it up like this, are you? But Marcy, it's all built to this. It's all roads have led.
Spoiling my synopsis.
You have maneuvered, you have bobbed, you have weaved, you have manipulated the system so that Mikey would have got the year. What year did you get?
1983.
Thank you, Mikey. Also, that you could land here for this pick in our anniversary mix. You could have episode 50 and you could have 1993. Why don't you tell us what movie you picked before we get on?
Oh my God, you're like totally ruining my synopsis right now.
Oh, for fuck's sake, then just ignore all of that. Ignore all of that. We don't have to stick that in if it's ruined your synopsis.
That's what she said. Look,
one time you've got to do a joke and not just laugh immediately afterwards. Come on. Okay, well, listen, ignore all of that bit if that's gonna be in your synopsis. Marcy, how are you feeling? This is the anniversary mix. You have got the year 1993 and you've also got the 50th episode. It's a burden, true, but it's also a golden chalice. A beautiful medal on your lapel. What movie have you chosen?
Am I being punked? Because you kept telling me this was not the 50th episode. You kept trying to pull the rug from underneath me. But it is the 50th episode. And I did get 1993. And if you know me, I went with Jurassic Park, which is tied for my favorite movie of all time.
With Dunstan checks in.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. This is the 52nd episode, if we're being specific. but we've had two bonus episodes. Mm-hmm. So the history books will show that this is episode 50. I'm ready for it. Mikey, how are you feeling?
I feel like one of those guys that come onto a baseball team when they're making a playoff run after the trade deadline. And I was added to a team going to the playoffs. I'm riding the coattails of what you guys have done all season. Thank you for bringing me on and bringing me to the championship and allowing me to play on this team. It's awesome.
Mikey, we would have never made it to the championship without you because me and Marcy would have been relegated by now into the minor leagues. If you hadn't come on and used your shining bat,
aka he would have quit on me,
passing us through to the World Series. I can't use Americanisms there because I don't really understand what's happening. So how are you?
I know I'm on the team now, but like, congrats to you two guys. That first season was a lot of work, and congrats to the both of you for continuing.
You were there,
though.
You were along for the ride. You were producing and yelling at us and making art and, you know, doing your thing.
Right.
Telling us not to have Cablasto on again.
No, Kevin. No, Mr. Cablasto. I did not say that. Kevin!
So I know there's been a lot of stress. There's been a lot of anticipation in the last few weeks. But Marcy, how have you been handling it?
Jesus.
Well, you have been celebrating. Kaya has dinosaur pajamas on, we saw. So this has been a
Kaya
celebration
has
day.
Dinosaur pajamas on. I'm watching her sleep right now, making sure she doesn't wake up. We did kind of watch a little bit of it together yesterday. You know what? She wasn't getting scared, and I was very proud of her. So I had it on, no volume. But she kept looking back, like, what's this, what's that? And so I'm very proud of my little girl.
Right, but now she's 7 months old. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's seen dinosaurs on the TV. She now thinks dinosaurs exist in the real world.
Okay? Yeah.
So you've created that reality for your 7 months old. How does that make you feel?
We do have a book, too, like, What Would I Do With My Pet Dinosaur? And we read that one a lot. And so it's going to be really sad when she's disappointed that, you know, they're not around anymore.
When there's not, you know, Mitosauruses roaming the streets. But looking back, Marcy, any favorite moments from the last 50 episodes, 49 episodes, because this is episode 50?
I think when Mikey officially joined, and I was actually listening to it today, I was listening to the Secret of the Ooze episode today because it just makes me laugh so hard. And, you know, I don't know. I just love you guys so much. And I'm so happy Mikey's officially a part of it. And I think that's, like, so far, there's a lot of, like, really good, nice memories. But I think that's my favorite one so far. So what about you, Dirk?
Dirk, well, what's your favorite moment? Yeah, what's your favorite
moment? I don't know.
One?
So many
that's a
favorite
great question.
Moments.
Yeah. Mm. We should play clips like we should do a clip show where you guys just play certain moments. Or we should just compile the Marcy laugh throughout the episodes.
All the behind the scenes bonus the stuff cut. You don't hear. Like when I couldn't clap.
The problem with that, Mikey, I don't know if you can hear me now. The problem with that, Mikey, is that would actually be a bloody load of work, and it's easier just to record a new episode, isn't it, than to go through all the old ones and find some clips. What's my favorite moment in this movie mixtape? I don't know. I like probably Marcy's reaction to the first ever Dad's Am I Right synopsis. That was a glorious moment, and then we just. I think just the, I don't know, Marcy has maybe watched some films I would never have watched in my entire life. Absolutely never. And that's not, I'm not making that up. I would never have watched these films because they look so absolutely boring. So boring. And so like, so old. Like if you just said to me, real name Dirk, you would be watching Pride and Prejudice. No, I wouldn't.
Old?
I would not
2005.
Watch Pride. Would not watch Pride and Prejudice. And that's the boring aspect of it, Mikey. That's the one that looks boring.
Not the black and white movies.
I would never
or
watch one
like
of
that,
these films where people dressed in old-fashioned clothes and danced around.
I love it.
And we're just like talking about boiled potatoes. I would never really watch that. but I did, and I had a really good time. Marcy's on some kind of mission to make me believe Cary Grant's all right. So we'll see where that leads at some point. But I think probably that really. And you know what? We're all living in this age of existential dread, aren't we? Where you look at your streaming services and you can never decide what you're going to watch. So it's quite nice to be told by Marcy, you're going to watch this and you're going to bloody like it. And then you just have to, fingers crossed, I hope you do. But I don't think she's really... steered me wrong. Yeah, I think we've had a good first 49 episodes. And then, do you know what? It felt all real. And this is not blowing smoke up your bum. But when Mikey came in and did the art, and he said he was happy to do that, it was just like, it made us feel like a real bloody podcast, didn't it? And just seeing that come in all the time was so good, Mikey.
Thank you, man.
It just felt like a real, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Everything just felt like it came together, and it was just nice to do it with friends rather than with, I don't know. The reason we started it was because of friendship, wasn't it? And we wanted to have more opportunities to talk together. And we're definitely doing that. We're definitely doing that. So that's all the positives, definitely.
Yeah. I'll say, as a fan listening, it was early on, and I think people have started podcasts, and you kind of want to see the direction it goes. And I was wondering, you know, what the show is about. I didn't know anything. And Four Lions, when you guys had that episode, third or fourth, it was so captivating. And I had never heard of this movie. And everything you were saying was so gripping that I sought out that movie, because, like, I need to see this. And you made me go watch it. And it was an amazing episode. And that's when I was a fan. I don't know. That was early on. That was like their...
I was like... Riz pulling you over, though. That was the Riz on that effect. And I can't blame you. That was our second episode, Mikey. That's crazy. Okay. Yeah.
So that was where I got hooked, just to your conversation. I remember thinking, like, wow, I really want to see that movie because of what you guys said. So never thought I would be like, I think I said in one episode where it felt like a fan coming on to play for the team. So it's been fun. Thank you.
So not hooked from the first episode, though, Mikey. Okay. I'll dock that out of your wages this week. Okay. Have you doing anything good? Is it?
That's the greatest hit, Mortal Kombat. So, yeah, I can't be like, you're my favorite band and this is my favorite song. I have to do a deep cut to prove I'm a real fan.
Sure.
That's why.
Sure.
So, the second episode.
That difficult second episode. Who's been up to much? Anybody been doing anything?
I did see the new Turtles movie. We went to the drive-in, all of us. Kaya did not sleep. It was a very late night. But we had fun. So I need to see it again, though, where I'm not holding a kicking baby like the entire time. So
yeah, that's how I feel about like Across the Spider-Verse, I think. Not the kicking baby bit, but just I was managing children in this big auditorium, and I didn't really get to pay proper attention. I was like, my 2-year-old was just running around, smashing people's ice creams into her mouth and various different things. So, and you were at a drive-in, like you said, like you couldn't properly see the animation style.
I might do a solo theater trip just so I can really appreciate the animation of the movie. It's very cool from what I saw, but I didn't get to know the drive-in. The drive-in is good for mediocre movies. Like, that's the most fun you're gonna have at the drive-in, because one, it's hard to hear it sometimes unless if you're in your car the whole time, and then you can't really see the screen, you know. It's you can, but it's not like good quality. Like, I don't know, there were people seeing Oppenheimer at the drive-in, and I was just like, what a waste of money. You do not go to the drive-in to see Oppenheimer. I'm sorry, you just don't. So, but I'll see it again soon. I'm definitely going to buy it. It was a lot of fun, and I'm excited for Kaya to watch it when she gets older. But Mikey, you saw it too. What did you think?
We did get blessed this summer for a bunch of good movies, and Mia went there, whole event, planning with all her stuffies, she wanted to bring all her figures. She had a backpack full of figures. I kept looking over every so often, and her face, the grin on her face was just worth everything. And, you know, my son liked it too, but it's just something about, like, I think I put in my review, it's cool to kind of, she was counting down the days to this movie, and then for it to be everything she wanted to be, it was just like awesome to see. So, and it's also something, I mean, when I was her age, that's when I started like jumping on the turtle train. So it's pretty wild.
That's cool. How things like come back full circle, kind of. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool, Mikey.
Inherited that half shell from you.
Yeah, the ooze is in the DNA. That's my DNA test. Is when you see her destroying Ninja Turtles. Ooze. Dirk, when are you going to see it?
Yeah.
Pretty soon, I think.
Yeah.
I've got it lined up. Yeah, I've got it lined up in my sights. Maybe in the next couple of weeks, I think. I've got a day to myself, and that's what I planned on doing in my day to myself.
That'll be nice.
So,
what else are you up to?
That's going to take all day, isn't it? To see that movie. By the time I've got there, got off the bus, three bus rides to the cinema, then I pick my sweets, go and doing the pick a mix, and then I'm going, three white rabbits, three salted diamonds. Those aren't real sweets. I just pretended they were real sweet names, but they're not. And so I've got my pick a mix, and you know, you pay about £10 for your normal pick a mix in a cinema. So I'm going to spend a little while after I've picked my sweets going, that was a lot of money for them. But then I'm going to sit down in the cinema and enjoy it. And I might, it's my day off, but I'll probably still have to pick somebody up from school. Not school, because it's summer holidays here. Betsy's going to a gymnastic camp, so I'm going to have to pick her up from a gymnastic camp. So it's not like I can go full, I can't start chasing the dragon or something like that when I'm in the toilets watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So I'll have to just be the film. And maybe go somewhere silent afterwards and reflect on it and make a really poignant letterbox review about it. Something like that.
That sounds like a nice time still.
Oh, yeah, it'll be a very nice time.
It's nice to go to the movies by yourself. I like going to the movies by myself a lot.
Oh, yeah, I like it. That's I love it. Because other people are idiots, aren't they, Marcy?
I didn't say that.
Well, you texted me just now when you said that. You texted me and said, because other people are idiots. So I know exactly what you're saying.
If he reveals my DMs one more freaking time.
Well, now, Marcy, is it time? Has the moment drawn near? Are we about to discuss 1993's Jurassic Park?
We. It's time. It is time. But don't get mad. I am not here today to give a synopsis. But I am instead here to explain the definition of kismet. So it starts in 1994 when a little girl in love with dinosaurs watched Jurassic Park at way too young of an age, which led to an adolescent obsession of a movie that terrified and awed her. Fast forward to 2008, the girl is off to college and feeling lonely and out of place, you know, in her new area. But the love for this movie brings her comfort and helps her settle down into her new life. Whoa. Jump to 2020, the girl, now a woman, has a pessimistic view of the world, but her love for the movie remains ever strong. She begins to wonder if she's in the Alan Grant stage of her life. Finally, 2023... our protagonist has been doing a movie podcast with her dear friends, but hasn't been able to find the perfect mix to share her love of Jurassic Park. In the distance, the 50th episode is approaching during an anniversary mix. Our girl has been gifted the order of picking for the year 1993. She knows her one great movie love has been leading to this moment, so despite what one grumpy British co-host says, this episode is the definition of kismet.
Wow.
When are you going to do your synopsis?
So I was really thinking about this. I think most people know Jurassic Park pretty well. I think most people have seen it at least once. So, I did something from the heart. So deal with it.
Pressure's on now. We have to really deliver here. That was beautiful.
So Marcy, there was a lot of...
Yes.
Cogs within cogs, wheels within wheels, a lot of plans, a lot of backstabbing. You threw Mikey under the bus and gave him 1983 all so that you could get here now to have this, the 50th episode and 1993 with Jurassic Park. How do you feel?
I love how your kismet, beautiful speech. No, none of that applies. You really... cheated Mikey out and gave him 1983. Mm-hmm. So this is what was supposed to happen. I believe it in my core. I was supposed to get 1993 because my favorite movie that is tied with Roman Holiday of all time came out in 1993. And yes, it just turned 30, so it's a huge anniversary, and I'm feeling very excited. I have some questions for you guys. And I'm really looking forward to, I know what this movie means to me, so I'm looking forward to sharing what this movie means to me, but also hopefully finding out what this movie means to you, and it's a positive. That is more for Dirk than Mikey, so we'll see what happens.
Well, why don't you kick off?
I already talked about what my first question is going to be, so can I just ask my first question? Or is there anything you'd like to say, Dirk? Because you just tisked at me, so.
Did I tisk? I think that's just my way of speaking.
I heard it.
Yeah, I think I tisk at everyone all the time. If somebody says, okay, stand over there and wait for your drink, I probably just go, tss. You know, it's just my way. There was no intent. There was no malice there. Marcy, I am braced for your questions. I am so excited.
Okay, well, then I'm going to ask you first. When was the first time you saw this movie, and where was it?
What a great question, and one I was not prepared for at all. Well, of course, I'm of the age when I was able to see Jurassic Park in the cinema because I wasn't minus 3 years old. So Jurassic Park was was the movie of the year. You're absolutely right in picking this, even if you didn't love it like you do love it, because it is the movie, isn't it, of 1993. And there was such hullabaloo about it. And all the effects, basically all the press was about how amazing these effects were. And it's Steven Spielberg, so he's got a rep, and he did that film about the alien who wanted to go home. And everybody liked that one. So people were interested in seeing it. And I was interested in seeing it, Marcy. And so I went to watch it in the theater when it was released.
Wow.
I can't remember the town.
I'm jealous.
I kind of think that maybe I was down at my grand's house, and we went to see it one weekend when I was down there. It was definitely, was it a summer release? Can you remember?
Yeah, it was a June release. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it coincided with some form of school holiday, something like that, and went to see it. And then I'm going to say this, but I feel like you're going to ask a question about it anyway. After I'd seen it, I then bought the book and read the book.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That is one of my questions, but we'll get into it in a little bit. But okay. Okay. All right. Mikey, what about you? When was the first time you saw this movie?
My uncle had one of those basements, like a man cave. And I remember he would always like show off a movie. I don't think for some reason I had heard of it when I was a kid. And which is strange. And he wanted to show off like the speakers. He wanted to show off it was probably like a 50-inch projector TV screen back then. And he showed the scene of the T-Rex, and he when the T-Rex eats the guy in the bathroom. And that was like him showing his movie like theater. And that's my earliest memory of seeing Jurassic Park. And then like going, I did see it in the theater, and I had a friend with me, and there's one of the jump scares, probably when they were in the electric room, and when the Velociraptor pops out, and he just went, like screamed like a girl when that during that part. And that's the theater moment I remember about this movie.
Oh, wow. I love it. I definitely was very, 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 very young when I saw this. So I think we mentioned on the Secret of the Ooze episode how long it would take for a movie to come out on VHS back in the day. This is no exception. So I had to look it up. I do remember being 4 when I saw it. My mom bought it on VHS. I'll get into why that was. But yeah, it came out. So it was released in theaters June 1993. It wasn't on VHS till October 1994.
Wow.
Which is really holy insane. Smokes. To think about. I mean, now we get movies so quick. It's like, that's what made it so special, I think, back in the day. Like, you were just waiting for that to come out, you know? So my mom bought it because all we both knew about it was there was a dinosaur movie. And I really loved dinosaurs when I was little. And I think every little kid loves dinosaurs when they're little. Mm-hmm. And it traumatized me because I was four, but also fascinated me at the same time. So I was hooked, but I was also like legitimately scared that a velociraptor was going to eat me. Yeah. And I used to have nightmares, and my mom would be like, they won't come in the house. I was like, they know how to open doors. What are you talking about? So I just like was immediately like obsessed with this movie, because we'll get a little bit more into it, but there's so much awe to it. And I think it's, I was watching behind the scenes on my Blu-ray, there was original featurettes of the movie. One was from 93, and James Earl Jones was narrating it. It was really crazy watch that. Yeah, and Spielberg was like, yeah, this is going to be like the first time people ever see dinosaurs. And it really was. Mm. And to me, like, that's what dinosaurs look like. I will not accept anything else. They are from this movie. Like, velociraptors are actually, like, really tiny, or they were really tiny when they were alive. But, no, to me, this is what they look like, you know, this big, giant, scary thing. So I just have loved this movie from the beginning, and it has changed with me throughout my life. We'll get more into that later with one of my other questions. But I wanted to know, and whoever wants to answer this first can, but do you have, like, a most memorable time watching this movie? Can you think of a specific special time watching this movie? Or is it just, like, the first time you saw it?
Definitely showing my kids the first time, I think, because movies that were special to us, I think, growing up was, like, you get renewed eyes, which is a special thing to have them watch it. And then also to vibe to it, I think, is, like, an awesome feeling. So even like today, like I was rewatching it, and they were like, they always seen this, and you know, they were like doing whatever, but then they just stopped, and they just kept watching. And that's like the power of this movie. And it just was like a, you know, every time I think I watch it, anything with them is like a special thing.
Oh, I love that. What about you, Dirk?
Yeah, I think, I was coming into this episode somewhat of a Jurassic Park doubter, because I haven't seen it in a little while. I probably saw it lots when it came out. So I saw it at the cinema, like I said, and I think everybody was obsessed with it. And like you say, Marcy, that is what dinosaurs look like, right? That is what we all now accept. Dinosaurs look like that. And it was a bit like when you first played Halo and you saw the grass. You know, it was one of those moments. It was like, this is special. Something incredible is happening right now in front of me. And somewhere within the mists of time, the magic got lost a little bit. And I just had it was the first incredible movie that showed us what computer generated images could do, or something like that. But then when I watched it this time, I was so reminded of how incredible and how amazing this movie is, and how it just blasted through this 2-hour runtime, and it just felt every single moment was just something I remembered and something I absolutely record with total clarity. And had the best time just probably this last rewatch, and just reminding me, well, not reminding me even, telling me, forcefully telling me that this is a total masterpiece, this film. Like, and I was probably belittling it a little bit in my head by just being a summer blockbuster that did something really good with its special effects. But gosh, no, it's like, it's absolutely up there with everything you could ever possibly imagine, isn't it? And I think this watch just now perhaps just was the kick up the butt that I needed to remind me that.
It's so funny hearing you say that, because I was going to ask, like, when was the last time you saw this? Because, I mean, to the shock of no one, I watch this at least once a year. I used to watch this on my birthday every year.
I love that.
I have probably seen this movie over 100 times. I'm not even kidding. I watch it multiple times a year. I have been in IKEA. It's been on, and I have sat in the fake living room watching while my mom was walking around. I don't know. Like, every time it was on TV, I had to watch it. I was so obsessed with this movie. I had to just always watch it, like, wherever I saw. As soon as I saw wherever it was, like, what scene it was on, I just had to sit there and watch it. So
You're asking us all these questions, and the reality is this is your pick, isn't it? But why is that then? Why have you seen it 100 times? Why this movie?
That's one of my last questions.
All right.
Well, that is my last question, so we'll get into that. But I will share, I have two specific memorable times with this movie, and they're very recent, which is surprising. But during the pandemic, whenever, like, everything was shut down, we were lucky enough to have our drive-in. I am so thankful for that, because we went all summer, and we normally do go a couple times in the summer, but we were literally going every weekend. And they were playing older movies, and I got a double feature of Jurassic Park and Jaws, and that was unreal. Jurassic Park was first, then Jaws, and just seeing them back to back at the drive-in, I don't know, it was very special. And I love Spielberg so much, and they are very much in sync with each other, both movies. He's very smart with what he does with creatures, and yeah, guy knows how to film a movie, believe it or not. So that was really special. I never thought I'd see those in a double feature together. And then the other time that's really memorable for me was actually last summer. We have a really nice orchestra here in Pittsburgh. John Williams comes here a lot, actually. I got to see him live last year too, which was really cool. And he likes to conduct our orchestra and play his music. But last summer, our orchestra played along live to Jurassic Park, and I got to go see that. And that was very special and very cool because I love movie scores and I love this movie. And seeing it with a live orchestra, I don't know, it just took my breath away, all of it. And I don't know, I always find something special with each watch of this movie. But those two times, I don't know, maybe just because they're so recent, I really enjoyed both of those times.
Can I ask, because in the last question you were talking about watching it in college and feeling like kind of alone in college, and was this something that kind of brought you some kind of grounding, I guess, when you were going to college? And do you remember watching it and like being like, this is going to be like a cozy blanket?
Yeah, it is in a weird way. So is like the other weird one for me is The Thing from 1982.
Oh, that's good.
I don't think anybody would say that's
a blanket. No, I've seen people saying like that's like a New Year's Eve movie. It's so like it's good. Like a winter movie that people watch every year.
We do watch it in January now because it's in Antarctica and everything. So that's definitely one of those. But I don't know. I'm an only child. I really, my parents would just leave. Peace out. I'd have like the whole house to myself for like a week. And then college was new. I knew some people from my high school going to my college, but it wasn't like people I was really good friends with or anything like that. I had a brand new roommate. So I think what's nice about movies, and this kind of does go to our warm blanket mix, but there's certain movies that just make you feel okay. And this is one of them. So growing up, you know, if I was ever sad or alone, I would watch this. And then when I went to college, like, and I was like, what am I doing here? Where am I? I had Jurassic Park. And luckily, everybody loves that movie. So everybody on my floor would be like, oh, you watching Jurassic Park? And like, they would like pop in and stuff. And then like, sure enough, Hot Rod was a big one at parties. But somehow we'd always end up with Jurassic Park on too. But nobody complains. You put it on, everyone's like, everyone's drunk, and they're like, yeah, it's Jurassic Park. And it's like such a funny thing.
People love Stegosaurus, but not even in this movie. So cut that bit out.
They're in the second one, though. But yeah, so that's like, it's just always been a comfort. Like, hey, I know I can count on this movie. I can rely on this movie, and it's going to make me feel better. So yeah, that's just how it's always been for me. So
I try to think how to respond to that, because this is a film that you've seen 100 times plus. So, I mean, you probably didn't even need to rewatch it for this, but I guess you have because you love it so much, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I think both me and Mikey watched it with our kids this time around. Is that right, Mikey?
Yes. I did watch it with my kids this time,
Well, I think one of the things, like, I was a bit nervous about watching it with Betsy because she's 9, and I think we alluded to it last week or last episode. We watched Avatar to Way of the Water, and she had to get up, leave the room so many times because of how violent it was. And what I really appreciated with this is like how you do it, right? This is how you make a blockbuster that is all inclusive for different ages of the family. You said you were like 4 or 5 when you saw it, Marcy. And all right, that's a bit young, isn't it? That's a bit young. But she was 9 and she was watching it. She didn't have to get up once. There were moments when I could feel her whole body get tense because we were sat right next to each other, and you could feel everything was just holding on just that little bit tighter. And there was definitely one moment as well when she just screamed out loud, "Oh my God!" And I'll see if you can guess what that bit was in a minute. But one thing I did find hilarious, we were watching it, and what's his guy called? Nedry, isn't he? The guy. So the guy who's trying to smuggle out all the embryos from the island. You know, when he's doing that bit and he's getting lost in the bloody island and his car's crashing into various trees and he's trying to get himself out of there. She was giving this running commentary of it the whole time, and she was like,
"Oh my God."
She was going, "I don't mean to be rude. But actually, okay, I do mean to be rude. This guy is an idiot. He's an absolute idiot." she was cracking me up with all of these. like, what is he doing? What is he doing? Oh my God, I can't believe him. And she was seeing her ass that this guy was trying to smuggle all these things off and switching all these doors off everywhere and letting all these dinosaurs out. She's like, "If you hadn't done that, none of this would have happened." I'm like, "Yeah, no, Bets, that's the point of this bit in the film. This is the bit. This is how all the dinosaurs are getting out. Oh, what a waste of time he is.
Oh,
my gosh. You got to record her so we can play it over the movie during those parts. So we can all watch it, Betsy.
Betsy commentary, please.
She was furious at Nedry. She was like, this guy. Okay.
I love that you brought that up, because actually one of my questions for you guys, and I'll just ask it now since we're kind of already on it, but like, what is your favorite unintentional, like, funny moment in this movie? And I'll just give mine first, because it makes me laugh so hard. Whenever Grant is giving Tim CPR, and he's like, "Tim," and he's like, "No, Tim," and the way he says "no, Tim," it's just Sam Neill's performance and delivery. It makes me laugh. So whenever something goes wrong in the house, we always go, "No, Tim," and like, we always say that.
Well, that's awesome.
Marcy, can I hold you there for a second? And can we expand on Sam Neill's bloody performance in this film? Because if you'd have told me Sam Neill was going to be the star of the summer blockbuster, I'd say, "Sit back down, Spielberg, you've been drinking." All right? Because he is not the action star. But watching him this time, his line readings are absolutely crackers, aren't they? He's just gone, "Do you know what? I'm in a movie about dinosaurs, and Laura Dern, who's 20 years younger than me, is supposedly my girlfriend. So I am just having the best time ever."
Dirk, I mean, maybe Mikey knows this, but Dirk, do you know who was originally who they wanted to play Grant? No.
Let me guess.
Okay.
I have a guess.
Tom Selleck.
No.
I'm going to say, like, Harrison Ford.
It was Harrison Ford, Mikey. Okay. So Harrison Ford, I think, made the right call. He said, "If you put me in this movie, it is going to distract from what this movie is actually about." And he, I'm not kidding. That's what he said. No, but it's true though. Like, imagine like having a dinosaur movie, but you're like, "Oh, Harrison Ford." Yeah. Like, and I agree 100%. You kind of needed, like, one amazing thing Spielberg does is, and now he doesn't do it as much anymore, but he would put people that we hardly knew in his movies.
Yeah.
And you're so swept away by this story and the practical effects. And like, the people in this are amazing, don't get me wrong. But yeah, if you would have put in 1993 Harrison Ford in this movie, I think it takes away so much of it. I think Sam Neill was absolutely perfect as Alan Grant. And I'm so glad that Harrison Ford had the foresight to see like what he would take away from this movie. And I'm glad he said no to the role. So
and now, 30 years in the future, when these effects are all still impressive, but we can see it being done differently and better. The thing that really holds it together is that cast, right? It is Jeff Goldblum. It is Laura Dern. It is Sam Neill. And I was watching it this time and I was going, getting real big Star Wars vibes from it. Like, this is like your Han, Luke and Leia almost. Their chemistry, their little quips to each other. I was enamored by it. And I don't think I've ever really recognized that before, but how good the cast is. Because like Laura Dern, she's a great actress, but you know, you wouldn't book her for your summer blockbuster, would you? You wouldn't have thought so. But she's incredible. She is the boss of this bloody movie. And you're talking about your favorite unintentional funny moments. That bit when they're in the tree and Alan Grant's in the tree with the kids, and what is it, the car starts to fall, and he's like, looks almost dead straight into the camera, and he's like, oh no. And they suddenly start having to climb down incredibly quickly. Oh, he is hilarious.
Yeah, the whole car thing is actually really funny. Like, when he finally gets up there and Tim's like, I threw up. And he's like, "That nope, nobody's worried about that, Tim. Don't worry about it, Tim. It's okay, Tim.
That's the least of our worries.
It's so cute. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I love, too, whenever it finally all crashes. And he's like, well, we're out of the tree. Like, Tim's like, we're back in the car. And he's like, yes, but we're out of the tree. Like, and it's so cute.
Well, it's so cute. We had to watch this with Betsy over two nights because, of, you know, she does her bloody gymnastics and she doesn't finish till like 8:30. And then we've been watching the FIFA World Cup. So we watch all the highlights of that. And then we stuck it on. And I said, look, we could do an hour and we'll do an hour tonight, two separate nights. So we did the first hour. And I was driving her back from gymnastics tonight and she's like, we're watching Jurassic Park though, right, Dad? I said, yeah. I said, we could watch it. And she quoted that line. And we're back in the car again, but at least we're not in the tree. So, you know, that really stuck. Uh-huh. That really stuck with her. And I think the kids are magic in this. The kids are flipping dynamite. Yeah. They're such head-to-toe.
I have to say, I'm on a roll picking great child actors. And
all right.
Because, yeah, Lex and Tim. Lex and Tim are really good. I do want to, so kind of like, well, Mikey's got to answer the unintentional funny question, but kind of jumping a little bit ahead, I did want to ask if you've read the book, because I do like the book a lot too, but in the book, Tim is actually older than Lex, but what happened was the kid that plays Tim tried out for Hook, didn't get the job, and Spielberg promised, the next movie I make, it's yours. So that's why Tim is younger than Lex. So that's what happened. But I think Tim and Lex are 100% amazing in this movie. They are so authentic. And yeah, Tim
looks out there, Tim. Mate. Looked out on there, bloody Jurassic Park. Well done. Well done. Good negotiating skills.
I would rather be in Jurassic Park than Hook, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, who wouldn't? That's just bloody me. Bloody rather be in Jurassic Park. You get to meet dinosaurs, don't you?
But Mikey, do you have an unintentional funny moment that's your favorite?
Probably 92% of anything Jeff Goldblum does in this movie is like unintentional comedy to me.
Oh my
like
God.
Everything he's doing, just like when he's laughing
Goldblum.
At the dinosaurs when
is
they first appear. But we played like a
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Is he being Spider-Man in this film?
Is he being Spider-Man? What? Like his walk even was ridiculous. And then like, we shared like a GIF in our DMs, but like that delivery of like, well, there you have it. And he does like that lip lick. I was like, what? It's all unnecessary, this licking of the lips. But he's,
oh my God.
I love it though. It's like, you can't peel your eyes. Like, we were talking about Harrison Ford being distraction from the dinosaurs. I think Jeff Goldblum was, imagine Harrison Ford and Jeff Goldblum both.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I freaking love it. But I mean, you both know, most people that know me know, but I have a huge crush on Jeff Goldblum. But it started more with The Lost World, which I did force my mother to take me to the theater to go see. Because he's very, very hot. And he's hot in this movie, but he's like super hot in The Lost World.
He's also maimed in this movie for half of his screen time, isn't he? So he can't be too sexy. Yeah. When you've got a wound.
But his shirt's open. That shirt opening scene. Oh, Jesus Christ. That's so good. But one funny thing about him, I don't know if you like notice his jewelry or whatnot, but that's his own turquoise jewelry that he wears in this movie. What a badass. I just got to say, I love that man so much. Oh, my God. Just loved him.
Am I revealing too much? Sorry. Am I revealing too much, Marcy, if we tell our listening audience that you had a cardboard cutout of Jeff Goldblum at your wedding that you shared with us in the DMs. You're in your wedding dress in front of everybody doing a first dance, it looked like, with the Jeff Goldblum cutout.
It was, no, do you know at weddings whenever people pay to dance with the bride? So we had it at the wedding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't you know this? Is that not a thing over there?
No,
Marcy, I didn't know this was a thing over here for a while.
Really?
Yeah, until I was like a wedding photographer. I never even heard of that.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Oh, no, that's like a bride. Big thing. Like so it's like to give the bride and groom extra... So it's to give more money to the bride and groom. What you do is you pay, you take a shot, and you pay whatever you want, and then you get a dance with the brides.
Mm-hmm.
No. So anyways, we had the Goldblum cutout at the wedding, and I think somebody put a bunch of money in the thing, and then I danced with him. But I was going to dance with him regardless, so I didn't care.
Of course.
But when I met Jeff Goldblum, Jeff Goldblum, I don't think I told you guys the story. I know you know I met him, but I don't think
I'm doing it for effect for the show, Marcy. Come on.
I'm sorry. No, I'm trying to think if I told you the story of what I said to him. So he was doing it. So funny enough, he is actually originally from Pittsburgh, which is where I am from. And he was doing a jazz show here with his jazz band a couple years ago. And he was just walking around the crowd, just talking to people. Didn't give an F, like, love this man so much, just being his little charismatic self, like, having a good time. So I was waiting in line to talk to him, and I had the picture on my phone of me dancing with the cutout. So when I got up to him, I said, hey, look, you were at my wedding. And this man, without hesitation, goes, oh, yes, of course, I remember. It was a lovely time. Thank you so much for inviting me. And he was asked, and I had gone to this event with my mom because Dan was working, but he was like, well, where's your husband? And I said, he's not here right now, but he knows I'm in love with you. Or I said something like that. I said, he's like, he knows I'm very fond of you or something like that. And Jeff Goldblum goes, oh, but I am like a Wendy's hamburger and your husband compared to your husband. And I said, no, sir, you are filet mignon.
Whoa. Wow.
I took my shot. And I did it. I saw my shot. I took it. There we go. That's what I meant to say.
Clean up in aisle 6. Oh, my God.
But wait. There's a reason I said this. There's a famous quote from Paul Newman. Paul Newman was married to this actress, Joanne Woodward. And somebody was interviewing Paul Newman back in the day. And they were like, would you ever cheat on your wife or something like that? And he said, why go out for hamburger when I've got filet mignon at home? And it was like, ooh, smooth operator. So that's why I said that to Jeff Goldblum. Because he said the hamburger line first. It was like he was lining up the dominoes. So I had to say that to him. But he was very charming and hilarious. I'll have to send you the video of him singing the Jurassic Park song.
What?
The man is everything you could want and more. He is exactly like he is in these movies as he is in real life. And I know they say, like, don't meet your heroes or your celebrity crushes. But he was like everything you expect him to be and more. So I love Jeff Goldblum very much. One funny story, I just have to tell it. So Lost World is like where I like became obsessed with him. Okay, so Lost World comes out in 97. Also that comes out in 97 is Titanic. So literally every girl in my grade is like, oh my God, that Leonardo DiCaprio. And then there was me, the little oddball in the background going, yeah, but what about Jeff Goldblum?
That is adorable. I love that. That's so good.
So that, it's been a long obsession of Jeff Goldblum, but he's very handsome in this movie. So do you guys think he's hot in this movie or am I crazy? He's hot, right? He's hot in this movie. He's got the leather on and I need to stop.
One of the first things you learn about Marcy when you meet her is this kind of obsession with Jeff Goldblum. And I must admit, I thought it was a bit peculiar that when I first heard the story, so it's very interesting, isn't it? But no, Marcy, seeing this film in the rain when he's running with that flare to get the T-Rex, I was like, Jeff, let's sit down and book a holiday together. Maybe we can pick out some curtains for my house. He's very beautiful in this film. Very beautiful indeed. And but yes. I mean, when he
yes, I absolutely
did feel like
him
he was channeling,
and I am really happy that in the book Malcolm actually dies in the first book at the very end. Sorry, spoilers.
Oh, wow.
So I'm really happy that they kept him alive. Yeah, it's so weird. Like they reversed so much, like who dies and who lives in the first book compared to the first movie. It's really, really weird. Like Hammond dies in the book too.
Oh, wow.
But since we're talking about characters, so I would say the four main characters are Ian Malcolm, Ellie Sattler, Alan Grant, and Richard Hammond. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to know, other than the main four, who would you say is your favorite character in this movie, other than the main four?
I got mine. It's Samuel L. Jackson. I absolutely love everything he's saying. And then hold on to your butts, I say every single time I get in the car with the kids. And he's just smoking the entire time. I love it. And he's like, I love it.
Betsy's comment whenever Samuel L. Jackson was on screen was, he is smoking inside. That shocks you to a very core. I always like Muldoon.
Oh my god, that's my pick.
I especially like when it's him and Ellie and they have to get to the switch room and he's like, and she's like, oh, it's a quick run. We can make it. And he's like, no. We are being hunted. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, shit. Shit is getting real now. Yeah, I love that. I think he is very good. Because, I mean, he's not the most charismatic guy in the world. I'm not even sure what he's ever been in beyond this. But he is so good. So well cast in this. So probably Muldoon mm-hmm. is my... Probably. I mean, they're all good, though. I'm not arguing with... Samuel
I know,
Jackson.
Who's everybody gonna argue in this with Samuel Jackson? Perfect.
No one is.
I can't believe it. I think it's in one of my reviews on Letterboxd, but like I did have a friend in college that did not believe me that Samuel Jackson was in this movie, and I was like, you've seen it, right? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, he's in the freaking movie. He's Arnold. Dr. Arnold, are you kidding me? And so we had to rewatch it, and he was like, holy shit. And I was like, yeah. Yeah, so like literally the next year he blows up with Pulp Fiction, so it's like right place, right time for Samuel Jackson. But yeah, Muldoon is my favorite out of the main four. Muldoon is just awesome. Muldoon, I think, is like the only one that kind of, other than like when like Grant, Ellie, and Malcolm show up, but he's the only one that kind of like questions Hammond. Mm-hmm. Kind of like puts him in his place. I love the scene whenever they're doing the tour at first. And he's like, quiet, all of you. They're like going up to the T-Rex right now. Mm. Like, and he's really curious to see what happens. But he is so... I like how there's so much foreshadowing in this movie. So the very beginning, you get the raptor and him saying, shoot her. Well, she gets her revenge on him later in the movie. And like, he even says like halfway through it, like, you know, the raptors remember things. And I love the clever girl. Oh, it's just like, what a way to go. He dies like the most violent death, though. I feel so horrible because Muldoon's not a bad guy.
No.
You know, a lot of innocent people get it. Like, I'm fine with Gennaro going because he's the blood-sucking lawyer, as Hammond likes to say. But yeah, Muldoon has a really crazy death, but I think it's so memorable, too. It's like so iconic. And what a last line. Like, what a freaking last line. But yeah, Muldoon. Oh, he's just great. And he adds another layer of fun, I feel like, to the whole thing. I can't explain what it is. I don't know. But yeah, I don't really know him from anything else either. But he really, I love it. He's like a diamond. Like Spielberg found a diamond and just threw it in this movie. And was like, here we go.
How about all these, this park full of dinosaurs, and they've got all these automated doors. But yet the very first scene is some guy trying to pull up a door to let the velociraptors into the pen. I was like, why is he pulling up that door? Just surely they must just have some form of mechanical thing where nobody has to be near it. That was a bit like, oh, probably didn't need to do that, mate. He died for no reason, didn't he? The other magical thing I think about this from this watch, thinking about that bit in particular, that you were just talking about, Marcy, with Muldoon and his death and stuff. That's three quarters of the way through the film. The raptors don't escape mm-hmm. till like three quarters of the way through the film. And with my bloody hindsight goggles on, I'm thinking it's all about raptors, this film. It's their heart. They're like only in it for like about 20, 25 minutes towards the end. I think the script is majestic in the way that, you know, we have an hour with these characters, just sitting with them and we find out who they are, and we let mm-hmm. them have their little idiosyncrasies, and we learn about their relationships and all that palaver. And then after an hour, everything goes potty. And then after another half an hour, the raptors mm-hmm. escape. It's so good, isn't it? Like, I get so frustrated at the recent Jurassic World movies because it's like bad guys just get out straight away, and there's mm-hmm. none of that patience that we get with this film. That's why I was struck with this one.
Go ahead, Mikey.
Yeah, more than that, I think similar to what you were saying is that the danger are the dinosaurs, but it doesn't rely heavily on them because we have these, you know, we see like a dinosaur toss a Jeep over, and like in any other movie, it would just been like, it just shows the power of the dinosaur. But this one's like a whole scene of the Jeep is now in the tree and Timmy's in there and getting him out. And it was like a great Steven Spielberg filming a Jeep in a tree type of scene. And then we have this whole, you know, bit about like, what's his name? Wayne Knight. I forget his name. Ned. Shutting down the
Nedry.
Nedry, yeah. And they have to turn the power back on. And so there were like other realistic dangers in there where most action movies are sort of like, you know, they do these things and it's like an after, you don't even think about like a dinosaur tossing the Jeep over and everybody's okay. And then this was like mm-hmm. made even like spinning the car around, like them, that was like a new obstacle. They had to like run around the car as the dinosaur's pushing it. And I think that's where it feels like so much different and real than like another, you mentioned mm-hmm. those Jurassic World movies that were just heavily replied on.
Oh,
the dinosaur is kicking butt and every, and chaos everywhere.
Yeah.
You kind of lose it.
Can I ask you both a question? How much screen time do you think the dinosaurs have collectively, all the dinosaurs collectively in this movie?
16 minutes.
22 minutes.
It's 15 minutes.
Wow. Yeah.
So it really, you know what it really reminds me of is Anthony Hopkins as Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs. He's only in that movie for 16 minutes. But when you think of that movie, you think of Hannibal Lecter. When you think of this movie, you think of the dinosaurs. Mm. And I think that's just goes to show how well those movies are made.
Yes.
Yeah, you're
that
right.
Something is so minor on screen time-wise, but is like a blanket over the whole thing.
Well, because we're thinking about it the whole time. And that's like when you see the water and the tracks and you see just like the goat sitting there waiting to be eaten. Like you're thinking about the T-Rex the whole time. So it's almost like putting the T-Rex on screen longer than it actually is.
It's just like Jaws. Like luckily for Jaws, it worked out where the shark's name is Bruce in real life. So Bruce wasn't working. So it turned out like to be like seeing less of the shark had more of a build up to it. And it's the same thing with this, where I think he learned a lot from Jaws with this movie, that we are so excited to mm-hmm. see these dinosaurs. And what is the like ironic thing about it is you are so excited to see this T-Rex that by the time you do, you are horrified because of what it's doing. It's loose. Yeah. I love when Malcolm's like, God, I hate being right all the time because it's such a good delivery. And it's when the T-Rex gets out of the enclosure. And it's just, it's so smart that it's like the thing you've been most excited for.
Yeah.
Well, now it's going to be a horror movie. And are you still excited about it? Like, and it's just, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
It's a real composure though as well, isn't it? It's like a composure as a filmmaker to understand that your movie is going to rely on the personalities.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the spectacle,
mm-hmm.
but why buy into it? You buy into it because of the people, and you care about it because of the people. If it was a car full of like Boris Johnson and various other people in this car, you wouldn't really care whether the T-Rex ate them or not. But you have mm-hmm. to have that emotional connection.
That's a good point.
And that's what they spend an hour building.
I think too, going off of that, Dirk, what I love is that there are a ton of people when they first get there, but then, you know, most of the workers leave, but it's just a small group. So you can invest emotionally more into this small group. You're starting to care about these people. If there's like 30 people, which happens in all the sequels, it's just too many people that you don't have any attachments to any of them. But you know these people, you know what they're like, you know where their thoughts are, you know how some of them feel about the park, and it's just like you are dreading things happening to them. Even Gennaro, like, you know who he is, you know his game. He doesn't deserve to die like that. Yeah, like, or like Muldoon or Arnold, I do want to say one really funny thing. I will probably edit this out, but my whenever I saw Jurassic World and it was straight trash, I was like, here's what they should have done with the movie. Yeah. They should have had one-armed Samuel L. Jackson sabotaging the park. That's what they should have done. Whoa. Because we never saw him die. We only saw his one arm. Was that the scene that Betsy freaked out at? The arm scene?
It was just before. It was and that is the most horror-filled, that is the most horror scene, isn't it? Where Ellie is like, Mr. Hammond, I think we're back in business. And she looks like a sweaty mess. And then the velociraptor pierces through the wall behind her. That was the bit where she jumped out of her seat. And was just like, oh my goodness. So I think that is the, that's your jump scare, isn't it? That's your big jump scare in this film. But it's earned. I hate movies with jump scares all the bloody time, and I'm just like, I'm anxious and I'm sweating because I'm like, you're not giving me a moment to breathe and I'm not enjoying your movie. Whereas it was totally earned by that point. We'd got, like I said, three quarters of the way through the movie. We knew what the stakes were, and it was justified that this raptor was going to pierce the bloody wall. So good. And Betsy's other comment was, why is she running weird after this? What's up with her leg? So she... Everybody gets wonky legs in this movie, don't they?
Well, do you know what happens to Ellie when she's running? The radio is on her feet, on her ankles.
Yeah. And she
wrapped around her ankles.
She gets knocked back pretty hard as well, doesn't she? So I'm willing to accept it. And also, it's a funny walk, isn't it? It's a funny run. Makes it all a bit lighthearted that she's running like a penguin.
Yeah, I do like that, like, there are really horrific things, but he'll cut to the next scene and it's something a little bit more lighthearted to balance it out. That's the magic of Spielberg. He knows how to even it all out. Yeah,
and I think he knows he knows how to deliver violence without actually showing you it as well, but just giving you the idea that that's happened. We've got Nedry in the car. We've got, we've just got a limb for Samuel L. Jackson. And like you said, Muldoon's death is obscured by loads of plants. So we can actually know what's happening. We don't need to see viscera being ripped out of somebody's abdomen. We know what is going on there. And I just think there's confidence in that. I mean, I feel like I'm patronizing Steven Spielberg to say he's got confidence in his own directing and he knows what is necessary, but I think he really does.
No, but you're right. He does heavily rely on directing things like this, because otherwise you just have a regular, action movie or a regular horror movie, and that idea that you have of that, the tension that it's all like, filmmaking 101 that he just executes so well.
Well, I kind of want to get into, I was going to ask one other question, but I think we kind of lead perfectly into this other question, so I'm going to go there instead too, and I'm going to give my answer first, if that's okay, because I have two. Good. But
yeah,
my question is, like, what to you, like, what is the most iconic scene in this movie? And I am tied between the initial T-Rex attack, because it's insane. It's always insane. It doesn't matter how many times you see it. It's absolutely insane. And then the other one is when they see the Brachiosaurus, or they see the dinosaurs for the first time. Those, to me, are the very, and they're polar opposites of each other. Like, you've got the awe and the wonder with the first initial viewing, and then you've got the terror and the horror with the T-Rex attack. But those are my two most iconic scenes. But do you guys agree with that, or do you have other scenes in mind for that?
I'll say, like, whenever I think of this movie, and the iconic scene is always when the kids are in the kitchen and the raptors come in, just because they act like such, like, animals or dogs. And it's, pretty much like one of those horror chase things where you're trying not to make noise, but just like the reflection that he hits. I'll always remember that first time I saw it, where the raptor's running at her reflection and hits a reflection instead of her. That whole thing just stands out to me still to this day. I don't know. It's a combination of how good they looked and how, like, I guess maybe as a kid too, like, you're in the kid's perspective and you just feel helpless to it.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, going a little bit off of that comment, Mikey, Whenever the kids are with Grant, I always was like, they're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. But the thing with the kitchen that's so scary is they're alone.
Yeah,
good and point. You're yeah. like, oh, God, is something going to happen to them? Yeah, the kitchen is terrifying. I hate the raptors. They are such jerks. And oh, my God, they are so scary. And I know maybe you guys might disagree with this, but I feel like the CGI, for it being 30 years old, I feel like it still holds up pretty oh, yeah. well.
For, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
well, I love the combination yeah. of like how they use kind of like practical and CGI. Yeah. You guys watched the Light and Magic on Disney
yes,
Plus?
Yes, I did. Oh my God. I couldn't wait to get to the Jurassic Park episode.
Yeah. And I watch this, honestly, like when I'm working from home or whatever, I probably watched through this thing like 10 times already, just leaving it on the background. But that whole bit about how I can't believe like that they would just in the middle of filming, they've already done Sam Winston animatronics and they've done Phil Tippett doing stop motion and then they're filming and they just kind of completely changed course when they started really like after hours fooling around with CGI.
Yeah.
And Kathleen Kennedy just happened to see them, this guy Spaz making something on a computer. And she's what is this? Like, what's going on here? And Steven Spielberg looking at it and they just started funding CGI like on the spot.
Yeah.
And to, I don't know, really risk it all, like in the middle of production to just be like, let's see what this thing does instead of, mm-hmm. you know, instead of touch-ups, let's go that route and upsetting people yeah. that are still going to be working on the movie. I thought mm-hmm. was.
But then it leads to like when they finally show Phil Tippett that they're not doing the stop motion anymore, he goes, well, it looks like I'm extinct. Mm. And then they added that line into the movie whenever Ellie's like, yeah. what do you think? And Grant goes, I think we're out of a job. And Malcolm says, don't you mean extinct? So, but they did keep Phil on yeah. and he was part of like the motion designer for the dinosaurs. And he had like the creators actually do like motion classes and stuff and like try to put, I don't know if you've seen the behind the scenes footage of all these animators running like Gallimimuses.
Yes. Oh, so
it's
good.
Freaking hilarious. Oh my gosh. But Dirk, what for you is the most iconic scene in this movie?
Oh, just before I say that, I think part of the reason why it works so well with the CGI is because it is mixed in with physical effects, right? Like, you yeah. know, the yeah. the Triceratops is a physical effect, I presume. Is he, Marcy? The sick Triceratops.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So, like, you have that stuff that feels substantial that you can reach out and touch, and it makes all the other aspects of it so much more believable. But I do still think it holds up. And I don't think there's a wrong answer to this question because this whole bloody film is iconic. And, Mikey, mm-hmm. the bit with the raptors in the kitchen, when that raptor jumps up onto the kitchen surface, yeah. Betsy just said out loud, oh, what did she say? What did she say? Oh, bloody hell. That's what I would say. She went, oh, you're kidding me. You're kidding me. She was like, oh, not this now. Now they're jumping. Now these dinosaurs are jumping on things. Oh, I'm done with this. I think everything you've said is iconic. So the time they see the Brachiosaurus, it's almost played like a silent movie. The mannerisms, Sam yeah. Neill's acting, the way he fumbles with his sunglasses, the way he cranes Ellie's head towards them. I love it. It's like Buster Keaton is seeing dinosaurs for the first time or something like that. But I think if you're talking iconic moments and you're talking things that have been aped and replicated in common culture, you can't not mention the ripples in the water when the T-Rex is
yeah. kind
of coming into view and just the ripples in the footprint when a bit later on with Malcolm mm-hmm. injured in the car and he's like, yeah, we need to go now. And just all of that, I think, it's all, but do you know what? I was surprised at how little filler there is in this movie that isn't some kind of scene that is just embedded into your brain, right into your occipital lobe or something mm-hmm. like that, because all of it yeah. is just iconic.
Do you know how they made, like with the glass of water, do you know how they did that effect?
Did they let off a balloon?
No, they used a guitar yeah. string.
Did they?
And the vibration of the guitar string
yeah, that's cool.
created the ripples in the water.
Well, no, you're wrong there, Marcy, because it was a dinosaur, okay? a dinosaur, and actually not just a dinosaur, a T-Rex. So I thought you would have known that, being an expert.
Oh, my bad. I'm sorry. Well, speaking of the T-Rex, I do want to talk about one other behind-the-scenes thing, and I think it does make the T-Rex attack so iconic. So whenever Tim and Lex are in the car and they're trying to turn off the light, oh, God, you're just so like, oh, come on. Like, yeah. Grant's like, if you just stay absolutely still, and then they're flailing around, they got the light. But when they're looking up, that T-Rex was not supposed to break through the car. That scene was total accident. So those were their initial reactions of that animatronic crashing into the car, breaking the glass. And that wasn't supposed to happen at all. So those are genuine screams. And they kind of lucked out with that all happening because, I mean, I'd be freaking out. I mean, even though you know it's not real. I mean, could you imagine that coming at you? Oh, my God.
Still being made a living off of the traumatizing kids.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's a bit like the chest burster scene in Alien then, isn't it?
Yeah, because I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny you mentioned aliens because this is the first time that I had serious alien vibes watching this, where they split up the party and then there's like something you don't really see on camera the whole time chasing them. And I was feeling, I know you said Star Wars in the beginning with the characters, but I was like, this feels like Alien, like that alien formula, which I never realized before.
But I think what we're saying is this feels like a really good movie. Like it feels, it's got all these. These elements and ingredients that make just a really good movie. So you've got excellent characterization and you really care for everybody that's in it. You've got a well-structured plot where you isolate individuals so that they're vulnerable and you're worried about what's going to happen to them. And it's not like specific to Alien. It's not specific to Star Wars, but because we love those movies as well, you can really feel it, I think, in this, because it just does it. It just does it. It's a masterpiece in a way, isn't it? It's like a masterclass in how you do it. And just coming back to that light with Lex, even today after we'd finished watching it, Bet said to me, "But Dad, why was she shining that torch? What? I don't know. She was panicking, Betsy. She was panicking."
I love though, even just the little effect of like when the pupil gets smaller because the light's on it, like just little things like that. It's just like that makes everything. Like I don't know if they ever will, but I hope movies get more back to practical stuff because it just makes all the difference in the world. And that's why I think this movie is so special. But I do want to mention one other scene, just because I don't know. I kind of mentioned in Roman Holiday how I went to Rome just to go experience Roman Holiday. Well, I went to Hawaii just so I could see some Jurassic Park stuff. And the infamous Gallimimus scene that we were just talking about, there is, I'm going to mispronounce it. I'm so sorry. There's a famous ranch in Hawaii where they film a lot of movies. It's called Kualua Ranch, and we did an ATV tour of it, and we were in the spot where they filmed the Gallimimus scene, and they still have the fig tree there that they used in the movie where they hide behind and stuff. But you know, we were driving through the the open area, and I was like humming the theme song in my head while we were doing that. But that was a really cool tour. They do different tours. You can do like catamarans. You can do horseback riding. The ATV tour was so much fun. Oh my God. And just magical to be where they filmed. And Hawaii is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And it was just everything I wanted and more, just to be where they filmed the movie of my dreams and in my dream area of Hawaii.
Wow, that's like people who love Lord of the Rings going to New Zealand and doing like a
I really cool. want to do that too. So I plan on that one day.
One of us here have already done that to him.
But yeah, when I went to Rome, I did a lot of Roman holiday things too. So, but those are my two favorite movies, and I made sure I wanted to go be where they filmed that.
It's really good.
So that's a little nerd fact about me. But we were kind of just talking about it. Well, Dirk was saying like how every scene is iconic. Everything is like, there's just hard to pick one scene specifically. But I wanted to know, you know, what do you think makes this movie so timeless? And I have a lot of answers, but whoever wants to go first, please do. And maybe we'll just all bounce off of each other with this.
I'll go. Cause there was something else I want to say. Cause there's, the idea that it's timeless, I think is not, yes, there's great scenes and there's that tension. We have those iconic scenes. I think the idea that, unlike most movies where your heroes are They kind of redo this later on. It's not as good. It just becomes kind of cliche. But in this movie, they're really like, there's a speech she does when he talks about the flea circus. I forget what he's talking about. A flea circus, all an illusion. And she is kind of saying, like, I came here and I was blown away by all this. And I'm like living this fantasy. And this is everything I think about. But all I'm thinking about right now is like Grant and like the kids, and like, it's not worth it. Like there's like consequences to having this seduction to power. And like Jeff Goldblum says the iconic line, like, you know, we never stopped to think about, should we do this? We just thought about, could we do this? I butchered it. But that whole idea about there's like a intellectual debate within the movie. I mean, that's all, by the way, what is Jeff Goldblum? He's a
chaotician.
I mean, like, it's just like, he was there to facilitate this, like, devil's advocate. Like, why are you doing this? Like, what do you think is going to happen? Like, what, of course this is going to happen. Just to be like, okay, let's say in this it's like a discussion with your friends. Like, let's say dinosaurs come back and you have the power to do that. Is that a good idea? And then, like, that's the whole premise of the movie. Like, yeah, we can make a theme park of it. And then be like, what happens if they get out? And I think that idea, like, it makes movies that make you think about, like, what I would do, what debate, what side would I take in this type of movie?
I'm so happy you said that, because I always catch something different, not different, but I always catch something else when I watch this, just because I've seen it so many times. And I really honed in on something that I knew was always there this time, but I wasn't really paying attention to it. And the reason I really caught it this time is because it is so relevant to what's in theaters now. But on Nedry's computer, he's a picture of Oppenheimer.
That's cool. That's
and cool. It's like, Spielberg is asking, like, just because you can make something, should you make it? And I love that there's so many relevant questions still to this day being asked in this movie. And I think that's part of the reason why it's timeless. But it was just so odd. Like, I've always seen that picture at Nedry's desk, and I always knew who it was. Well, not always knew, but, like, you know, at a certain point in your life, you know who that is, but you don't think much about it because it's so minor. Mm-hmm. But then, like, this time, just because the Oppenheimer movie's out in theaters now, it's like, oh my God, like, that's brilliant. And also just like Nedry being the reason, it's on Nedry's desk. Nedry's the reason everybody's dying. You know, Oppenheimer, like, you know, is the reason so many people died, you know, at that time. Mm-hmm. It's just really smart and very minor, but it's there, and asking a big question with just a little tiny
detail.
That's
a great connection. I love that. That's really good.
Yeah. Dirk, anything to add to that?
About the timeless bit, is that what you were saying?
Well, anything. Yeah. Like, what to you, like, makes this movie timeless?
I think timeless is it's simplicity, isn't it? It's something that is simple, because it has to, you know, what the culture was in the 90s is not what the culture is now. So if it's overly complex and has little nooks and crannies in it, then it's probably going to get lost. But it is so simple. But yet it makes sense. And it's, you know, the high concept is about a park full of dinosaurs, but something goes wrong. Right. We're all into that. We can understand that. Then it's the performances. Everybody's believable. I don't know, probably I was really surprised this time about how much I was into Sam Neill. And I don't think I remembered that at all. Watching, and maybe it's because we're probably about the same
age now. Say something, and this ties into why I think this movie is timeless. I've had this movie in my life since I was 4, and as I get into different ages, I connect to it in different ways. And I currently am in the Alan Grant phase of my life. Like, do I want to have a family? Do I want to have kids? Do I like kids? Like, you know, like, and his connection with Tim and Lex, and like he hates kids, but he just doesn't like kids. And you know that from the very beginning, but without hesitation, he steps up and he is going to get these kids out of Jurassic Park, and how close he gets to them. And I just absolutely love him in this movie. And I don't know why I'm getting emotional, but I am so attached to the Grant character right now in my life. And it's funny that you say that, but this movie never used to make me cry, but now I cry two separate times when I watch it. And one is obviously when they're all in the helicopter leaving and Ellie looks over and the kids are both asleep on Grant. That always gets me anymore. But the scene that really surprises me, and I don't know why I cry at it, but it's whenever they're about to all get on the helicopter to leave, and you can hear the dinosaurs in the background, and Hammond has one last look, and Grant has to talk him onto the helicopter. And I don't know why, it just makes me so sad. And I mean, like, I think Hammond is the type, I don't know if there are real billionaires like this that have the best intentions, but shouldn't be doing the thing that he's doing. And I think he really did care for everything he created, because like even in the beginning when you see when the raptor's born, he's like, I've been here for the birth of every living creature on this island. And you can tell how much he loves these dinosaurs. You know, he's actually putting the dinosaurs before his own grandkids at times in this movie. But it's just this really sad, it's this really sad look that he knows they're gonna die, it's all over, and Grant has to get him on the helicopter. And it's just, it's a very quiet scene that makes me cry now every time I watch it.
I think he's still a billionaire though, isn't he? And he's still a billionaire who doesn't care about Nedry's financial woes. And maybe if he'd slipped him an extra sort of 20 grand to pay some debts, none of that would have happened.
How about the irony of spared no expense but didn't pay Nedry enough money?
I know, exactly. That's what I mean. Okay. I think, and Marcy, you've read the book as well, and so you know his character goes off in a slightly different direction in the book. And that, that's something that's always stayed with me. We get a very light-hearted version of Hammond, I think, in
so
this.
So I think that there's a reason. Yeah, so Richard Attenborough was an actor, and then he became a film director, and he was the director that Spielberg really admired and really loved. So I think having him in that role, I don't think he could have made Hammond unlikable, if that makes sense. Mm. He wanted Richard to be likable, and he really is, even though he's, you know, a stupid rich billionaire that shouldn't be making dinosaurs, but he is, you know, there is something very charismatic and charming about him, like yahoo, like we were talking about that the other day, or just even like in the beginning when they're like, who are you, what are you doing here, he's like, oh, I'm John Hammond, and they're like, we were saving that, and then like he just opens their champagne and like doesn't care, and he's just like, I like you, the both of you, why don't you come to my island? Like, you know, and he's just so cute, but terrible grandfather,
terrible, like- terrible employer, terrible grandfather, you know, just pretty terrible, but overall, but he's he dresses like the man from Del Monte, and he's got a nice smile on his face, so he gets away with it. Betsy audibly giggled at the sight of Alan Grant sleeping with the two kids at the end, so she'd obviously made a connection to that relationship that was kind of blossomed through. So that was nice to see. All I could focus on was Ellie just IFing the heck out of Grant on that a helicopter, because he'd now developed paternal instincts, and she was like, okay baby, when we get home baby, I love
when Malcolm's like, so are you and Dr. Sattler, and he's like, yeah, we are. And but I love whenever Ellie does flirt with Malcolm a couple of times, and she's like, hey, she's only Alan, human. Look at this, and then he gets out of the and she's like, oh shit, Alan, come back, and but really he's just distracted by the dinosaur.
Yeah, Ian Malcolm's just going for it. He's like, I'm always looking for the future.
Yeah, Mrs. X, Ian Malcolm.
Good Lord. Chaos. Maybe that's what a chaosistus is. Whatever his job.
Chaostician.
He just F's up people's marriages.
I mean, I could not blame anybody leaving their significant other for Ian Malcolm. So I go at it. Have a good
time. Can I ask, since you guys read the books, like that stuff about like the, you know, the morality of it, and those like that debate of like God like debate that they have throughout this movie, is that not in the book? Is it just really?
Ian is really the voice of reason, but Ian dies unfortunately from his wounds from the T-Rex attack. I believe that's what I know. He dies at the very end, but he kind of is the voice of reason, right, Dirk? If I remember correctly,
it's all about chaos theory, though, isn't it? There's a lot of chaos theory in there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of genetics, I think, in the book, because
There's so much science I read it in the book.
When I was 15, really, Mikey, so I can't quite recall the exact details. But I remember really loving it and being surprised by how different it was, because Ellie and Grant, they're not together in the book, are they? And a few different things in there. It's good as well. You know, you could read the book and enjoy that separately to the movie, I think. Can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
I just wanted, because you mentioned the DNA part in the book. Like, I love how they did all, like, the DNA thing in, like, 2 minutes. Yeah. It was so good. Such a good way.
All the science of the book is in that scene, but it's throughout the book. But what's nice is Spielberg knew just to make it that little chunk of the movie, you can lose people easily if you try to drag that, not drag it out, but if you, like, have it the way the book is. And I just want to say one really quick thing about the book. The book was not even out to the public yet, and Spielberg bought the rights to it. So he didn't even know what was it. He just knew it was a book about dinosaurs in, like, modern time. And I think he paid Crichton, had $1.5 million for the rights.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Crichton had done Westworld. Yeah. He wrote and directed the original Westworld movie. And all this other cool stuff. But Crichton does have a screenplay credit. He did write the screenplay, too, with one other person. So it's cool that he was involved the whole way as well. But there are some significant changes from the book to the movie. But I think they're really smart and well-done changes. Like, sometimes you get annoyed where you're like, that was nothing like the book. I'm actually very thankful that some of this was not like
that. Yeah.
I love the book, too. But I think they did the right thing here with some of the choices.
Both,
yeah,
you can have both. You can have a book that is different to the movie and enjoy both. And you could definitely do that. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you my two questions, because I can't remember what happens in the second film. So do we get payoffs for the lysine stuff? Does that get paid off?
No. They're all alive. So there's a second island. So what happens? The second movie starts. Hammond is being sued left and right. Hammond's nephew is trying to open a park in San Diego, but discreetly. So they're pretending to go catch up these dinosaurs and take care of it on the second island that Hammond owned, where there was, like, a breeding facility of the dinosaurs and everything. Where on this island, you know, it's just female dinosaurs, no breeding. But on the other island, there's both genders. They're breeding. It's whatever. It's, like, totally free-for-all dinosaur love fest, I guess. But he's going to go to catch things to open his own park in San Diego. And the lysine thing, they never talk about the original island. But they do go back to it in the third movie, and everything is still alive. And everything has been breeding and multiplying. And then they go back to it again in Jurassic World, and they have the original so the T-Rex in Jurassic World is the original T-Rex from the first movie. So nothing happened with the lysine. They didn't kill off the dinosaurs. That's why I'm saying Samuel Jackson could have been alive with one arm sabotaging the park, is what I'm saying.
We also had the scene in this where Grant discovers the dinosaur eggs, and nothing came of that in this movie either, did it? We know there was no point. We didn't get a payoff to the fact that they were reproducing and breeding in this. That's why I just kind of
I think the point of that is, like, you finally realize, like, everything Ian has been saying is correct.
Sure.
Like, this was like, okay, oh yeah, they could breed, but also, yeah, this was a mistake.
Yeah.
Like, You're the wonder is officially, like, oh, you're snapped back to reality, not just with the T-Rex attack, but that in that moment, you're like, oh, they really have no control over this situation. They have no idea what they're doing in this situation, and they probably shouldn't be doing this, is I think the reason for that in that movie. But in The Lost World, yeah, they are breeding, because there is a baby T-Rex that's a big part of the story of the second movie, and there's other baby dinosaurs and whatnot. But I think it's just more of, like, a snap back to reality when you see those eggs. But even Grant is still a little bit in awe of it all.
He's made up.
That they, like, life found a way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know?
He's always made up, isn't he?
Questions. I have two quick questions, Marcy. Should they have made a sequel to this movie?
Okay. So as much as I love The Lost World, and I think it's just mostly the Goldblum of it all, I wish they would have just left this alone. I wish they would have never made another one.
Okay.
Ever. Like, this movie's so perfect.
It is. Okay. But if you were to recommend to somebody another Jurassic Park movie, which one would you pick?
I would probably pick... You know what? Honestly, if you want to go like direct sequel because it's the main island and it's Grant as the main character, I would go with the third movie, honestly.
Joe Johnson.
It's only like... It's only 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's pretty straightforward. Ellie's in it too, in the beginning and the end. There's some cool dinosaur fights. And I think it feels more like a sequel to the first one than Lost World, if I'm being honest.
Is Vince Vaughn in number two, right?
He's the number two, yeah. Yep. And so is Julianne Moore. Julianne Moore and Vince Vaughn in the second one, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Ian Malcolm's girlfriend in that movie is Julianne Moore. So, you know, that's why he goes to the island. He finds out she's there. He goes to go save her, but she's fine.
Is that when he has the daughter that they adopted?
Yeah, the daughter that does gymnastics. Oh my God, the gymnastics scene in The Lost World is unforgivable, but that's when she like does like a whatever it is on spinning on the bar and she kicks a raptor in the face. Oh my God.
Hold on, Betsy's going to be into that big time. So we
you got to watch the second one.
And she
you got to watch
ask the second after one. After we finished it tonight, she went, "Can we just watch the second one now?" So she's into it. She's on board. She's on board.
Oh, cool.
How about?
Okay.
Thanks. In the end. When the raptors are there and you think they're going to eat them all, but the T-Rex comes in. It's a bit of a Deus Rex Machina, isn't it?
Oh my God. Do you think he's Saurus Rex? I'm sorry, that was such a Tim joke. Sorry.
As if Alan Grant didn't know the bloody punchline to that. Do you think he's Saurus?
He
doesn't know dad jokes.
Well, he's not a dad yet. There we go. Yeah, he's not a dad yet.
Listen, we all know
dad movie.
To that joke, Tim, we all know the joke.
Do you know that they were like about a week out from finishing filming everything and they decided to change the ending. So the original ending was that the skull of the T-Rex fell on the last raptor and killed it. And Spielberg was like, "That's not exciting enough." And he's like, "Why don't we make, you know, everybody's here to see the T-Rex.
Why don't
we make the T-Rex the hero of the movie?" And then that's why that all happens.
Well, that's a better
ending.
And
I really like it. It gets me so emotionally where you're like, how do they get out of this situation? And then there she is, that beautiful T-Rex, and she's had enough of these little raptors, and they just like scurry on right up. Oh my God, I couldn't even imagine. Like the acting in this movie is so unreal because with the CGI, they're looking at nothing and they are giving it their all. Oh, it's so good. I freaking love Grant being like, after careful consideration, I've decided not to endorse your park. And Hammond's like, so have I. And it's like, oh my God. But it's so good. It's so good. And I just love this movie so much. And I will always love this movie. And I'm so happy. It sounds like you both love it, but I wouldn't be surprised if Dirk is like, "Well, actually, like, I'm a gold." So
he's doing a Kate Nash impression.
But I love this movie so much. It's just the best, and it's never not the best. Like, I've seen this movie so many times, and it still gets me every time I watch it. So thank you, guys.
Thank you for sharing it.
Any other questions? Anything else you want to ask me? I know a lot about this movie, if you couldn't tell. So,
Why is there a kid in the dig site in the beginning of this movie? Like, who brought that kid?
Throw that down to you.
Who's letting this guy put a claw to his stomach and pretend like to be cutting out his intestines? And where's the parents stopping him?
Alan, you could have put a gun on him. Like, I freaking love that line. Like, I freaking love that line.
I was wondering, like, technology that they had back then was cool, but, like, I wonder what it is now. Like, I wonder, because, like, I feel like...
Yeah, I don't know.
If only they made Jurassic Park movies now, Mikey.
They don't discover them. Like, there's no paleontologist work.
They said, though, like, after this movie came out, that, like, there was such an increase of paleontology in colleges, and I'm like, that's amazing, because what the hell are you gonna do with that degree? Like, it's like being a movie star. Like, there's a slim chance you're gonna actually make that
Can I tell you something that I was gonna reveal at the end, though? But because I have to do the art for this episode still, which is like a daunting task right now. But I was thinking about, you mentioned Kismet, but I grew up, the very first thing I remember kind of drawing, no, it's not true. But when I was like, especially in second grade, I was a dinosaur fanatic, and we would go to the Museum of Natural History and go see the dinosaur skeleton. And I would see, like, they would have like those animatronic parks, like Dinosaurs Alive, they would call. They called it. Mm-hmm. I would go there. I had dinosaur sweatshirts, and I had, like, I prided myself on knowing every single dinosaur back then. And there was even like stuff off the TV we would record on a tape, and like I'd watch this all the time. So when you're talking about this is what dinosaurs are to me, it was like a special about like dinosaurs, and they had like certain like dinosaurs in this thing, and I was like obsessed with dinosaurs back, and that's all I would draw. And to think like I'm drawing it now, I probably once it like migrated to Ninja Turtles, and then I probably hadn't drawn a dinosaur again. And I'm thinking for this episode, this is the first dinosaur I probably drew since I was 7 years old, 7 or 8 years old. So, but I wanted to be a paleontologist. I was like in my front yard. I was digging and I was like, I think this is a tooth. I think I got a tooth. And I was telling my parents, like, I'm going to be a paleontologist when I grow up. And they're like, okay, that's cool. It's, and you know, but that was my first profession that I picked out for myself.
That is awesome. I love it.
Paleontology's Lost is the movie Mixtapes game. Mikey. Anything else before we move on? Marcy, is anything you want to say just before we finish? Because it's been 6 hours since we started recording.
No, I'm good.
I will say, how about the computer? This was like the first movie I remember as a kid where like the power of computers, like this guy shut down a whole park based on some lines of code, like held them all captive. And then like the girl in the middle of it, she like was saved the day by knowing like the computer language. That was the first time I thought about computer code, like in a movie. I don't know. You cut that out.
The bit where she gets onto the computer and it is moving so slowly on that screen as she tries to navigate around and find the right place to click to turn everything back on. I was like, oh my goodness, just have your files alphabetical. Who's come up with this system of it looking like a load of the bit of villages on a screen and you have to go in and click on what village it is? Dreadful, Nedry. Dreadful. Jurassic Park. Or as Alan Partridge would say, Jurassic Park. That is it. We have done it. We have done Jurassic Park. But no, we have not. Because it is time for our song choices. This is the movie mixtape after all. And could we forget pairing each movie with a song choice for our 50th milestone episode? Mikey, do you want to go?
Yeah, I'll go. I have the lamest one because the first of all, Marcy, do we do your movie justice here? Because that's like a big task. Like, you know, I definitely was coming into this like wanting to make sure
you're guys
satisfied.
Yeah, you guys really like were very kind, and you gave me a big platform to talk about how much this means to me, especially Dirk. I know that was a lot for him to sacrifice, but it was nice to hear how much you guys love this, especially like that. Mikey, I think you probably watch this not as often as I do, but you probably watch this pretty often. Yeah. But to hear that Dirk hadn't seen it in so long and that he was able to reconnect with it, because like sometimes things get so hyped over time that you kind of fall out of love with it, and then you give it some time, and then you realize like why you loved it in the first place, or at least, I mean, that's how you came across Dirk. And that was really cool to hear, because I feel like that every time I watch it, but it's nice that you found your way back to it. So thank you both for watching it.
It was a real nice experience watching it with my daughter and not knowing if she was going to be into it or not, and her being really into it and being able to sustain the watch and not be having to leave the room was a really surprising thing based on our previous watch of Avatar last week. But I would have enjoyed it anyway, Marcy. I do genuinely think that it's a masterpiece, a real, real masterpiece.
Oh.
And it's beyond 5 stars. And I think it is timeless. It's everything you would ever want in a film. Ever, full stop, the end. So there you go.
Okay, perfect answer.
What's
your song?
Whenever I think of throughout this whole, it kind of ruins, sometimes you hear a song and it kind of like ruins things for you, like takes ownership of it. But there's a band, and it's so lame, but Jurassic 5, and they have a song Action Satisfaction, and they say this, there's a lyric in there talking about Jurassic catastrophe, and I keep, every throughout this whole movie, I just was like making that dad joke in my head, like, there's a Jurassic catastrophe, and so that's my choice for this. I couldn't think of anything better.
Beautiful. I don't think I didn't look love up it. The Jurassic 5 for my song choice as well. Okay, but it just wasn't familiar enough with their back catalogue to be able to go with it. So I'm pleased that they have been represented by you here. I will go next, Marcy, because we'll save undoubtedly the best to last. I found it really difficult this episode. I don't know if anybody else did, because I couldn't find anything that fit the vibe or the feel of this film like I really wanted to. But then I recalled, then I remembered a song I had already previously shared with Marcy that was named after her beau, after her fella, after her guy.
I almost picked this.
Did you?
I almost picked this.
I was worried you were going to pick it, actually. But I've gone for the Mateel song Jeff Goldblum, which is a song from the last few years and is a really great sort of indie pop song talking about falling in love with a guy who looks a little bit like a younger Jeff Goldblum. So there we go. That's what I have gone for.
Oh my god,
that's good.
That's so fun. I almost picked that Dirk.
I was worried. I almost texted you to ask you.
Dirk needs a song. Dirk needs a song too, so I'm gonna leave that alone.
Thank you.
And then going on what Mikey was doing, I looked up a band that I like called Dinosaur Jr., but I couldn't find anything that worked. So I kind of went funny with my pick. Yeah, this reminded me so much of Shaun of the Dead, where it's like, what the hell do you pick for this? And I really did a cop out for Shaun of the Dead. But I was really thinking of John Hammond and how like aloof and how nonchalant he is. Like, oh no, like no worries. Like even like when the T-Rex happens, he's like, oh yeah, you know, when we get control back and blah, blah, blah. And like Ellie's like, you never had control. Like, oh my gosh. And he's still delusional about it. So I thought of the song by Portugal the Man called What Me Worry. And the chorus is just all about like, yeah, why would I worry about that? Like the house is on fire and it's burning down, but why would I worry about that? And it just made me think of John Hammond.
That's cool. Perfect.
That's cool.
The majority of this movie, he is just like, oh no, it'll be fine. It'll be okay. We'll get the park up and running. Don't worry. A bunch of people have died, but we will find a way to get this park up and running. And I don't really care if my grandkids make it back or not, but it'll be okay. They're with Alan Grant. It's fine. So just like being comical with my pick. Song choice.
I was trying to feel like that. I was trying to go for like a vibe pick of just making a terrible decision or a bad mistake. And I couldn't find one that hit, but you've gone there, Marcy. You've got one that was the flip of the switch, not making the bad decision, but not being asked you've made a bad decision and just going with it. I'm loving it. If you want to listen to all these past songs that we have picked from our previous episodes, then you can click in the show notes. There is a link to the Movie Mixtape playlist. We are trying to recreate the feel of when you would share songs with people you wanted to get to know better in the form of a blessed mixtape. But we're doing it with movies, but we're also mixing in the songs. So click in the show notes and have a listen to our playlist. And if you go on our Instagram, which is the_movie_mixtape, at the weekend after this episode will come out, you will be able to vote on your favorite of those three choices. I reckon, who's going to win that, Mikey? Who's going to win it this week? I think you're going to win it. You always win it.
That's Marcy's week. Come on.
Yeah, you just won one. You just won one.
Did I?
I just won one, actually, yeah.
No.
No, I did.
What week
Dirk away? Has a song called Jeff Goldblum in the freaking title.
Wah, wah, wah.
Cheater.
I've never heard you laugh like that. I have never heard you laugh like that.
But if you want to write into us here at the Movie Mixtape and share stories about what you were eating the first time you watched Jurassic Park in the cinema, so that Marty can write you down in a little file of facts and store it in a laminated folder, then contact us at themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. But this week, this episode, we do not have any emails, and it's thank goodness, because Marty has rabbited on. And we're at...
I have spared no expense on the time of this episode.
all our ice cream is currently defrosting and melting. So is that it? Or no, what are we doing now? We have to do next episode, don't we? Yeah,
yeah, okay. Next week. Wait, so, okay, wait. Before Derek makes his pick,
hold on, explain what
I have
the pick
been taunting
be.
Him.
Explain what it
for
is.
For weeks now? Yeah, weeks now. That I could guess what his pick was, and he'd be like, shut up, bloody shut up. You shut up. So he wouldn't let me guess, but today I got one wrong, so I was able to guess that I thought maybe. So Dirk is going to have 2003. So Memories of Murder was my first guess, but no, it's not that. So my second guess, Dirk, and if I'm right, then I don't know. You can buy me ice cream. I don't know. But I am thinking, but it might be a little bit too close to Bill and Ted, so you might not go with it. But I'm thinking School of Rock for your pick.
Well, there are a lot of good movies out in 2003. I've been lucky with this year, unlike Mikey. I'm just going to go for a little bit of a list. We've got the Jessica Alba film Honey, which, you know, there's at least a good one good reason we could talk about that.
Oh my God.
We had the first Underworld films. with Kate Beckinsale. All right. And we've also, in this year of 2003, had the first ever movie with Dwayne The Rock Johnson in a starring role, as we had The Rundown with Christopher Walken. So those three choices were way up in my head. But I've not gone for any of those. Okay. I have gone for, from the year 2003, the sequel movie, X-Men 2.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Those were genuine reactions. Holy shit, this is happening.
Wow.
I was a bit worried it was too close to Logan, but I've just decided to go for it. Just go for it. Because it's a different feel, it's a different vibe. So that's what we're going to do. It was that.
I can't wait to do my Kurt impression next week.
Oh, dear God. Whatever we record. It was either going to be X2 or the TV movie of Battlestar Galactica, the pilot for the new series. So I've gone with X2. That's what we're going to do.
Wow.
So if you have strong opinions on Alan Cumming's German accent, then why don't you write in to us at themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com and get that in, okay? But otherwise, we will see you in a couple of weeks' time, probably. Thank you, Marcy, for this pick. This was the 50th episode. You've done it justice. It was a movie millions of years in the making, right? An episode millions of years in the making. I didn't know what I was going to say then. Just had to come up with something. I did a lot of swearing. Sorry, Nora, Brandon's daughter, who listens to this sometimes. So join us all in a couple of weeks' time for 2003's X2. See you then. Bye.
Bye.
Bye for now. Bye for now. Spare no expense and suck on that, you suckers. Nice. Mixtape is a podcast hosted by Dirk, Mikey P, and me, Marcy. Episodes edited by Dirk and Marcy. Show art by Mikey P. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Follow us on Instagram at @the_moviemixtape or email us at themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Bye. Oh yeah, I can't believe I didn't do the rah 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 when he's on the helicopter, because that is so fucking funny.
What?
Rah, 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 rah. Whenever they're like, ha-ha, ha-ha, when he's like laughing in the helicopter before they get to the island, he's like, so you two dig up dinosaurs? Ha-ha, ha-ha. Like, it's so funny.
All right. We got the end of the show.
Okay. All right, whenever you're ready. I don't know if Dirk is even here or if he just left. He left us. He left us. Ah,
good.
He left us. Dirk, are you here?
Tim! Tim, no!
No, Tim! Did he really leave? Did he go?
No.
Where is he?
I don't know.
I'm here.
He's up. Okay.